Okay, folks, before we start today's show, we want to give a big shout out to our sponsor, Texit Coin. And right now, today, October 23rd, 2025, that Texit Coin is sitting right at $5.29 USD. And I tell y'all what, their hash rate has tripled. And the hash rate out there where they're mining in the great state of Texas is up to 1 terahash. And I'll tell y'all what, that's exactly 1 trillion calculations per second. And they have now signed up 40,863 folks to take part in that mining out there in Texas. Hey, if you want to learn more about Texit Coin, just shoot an email to texitmines@gmail.com. That's TexitMines@gmail.com. Hey, slip the word palm in there, P-A-L-M, to get a discount on that first mining share. And we appreciate Texit Coin sponsoring the show. And here we go. Let's go right into the show.
Hello there, and welcome to the Palm and Pine Podcast. The boys are coming to you from their hidden camp, set deep in the Florida woods on the banks of the mystic Suwannee River. So let's take a moment and hear from the boys of old Florida.
All right. Hey, folks, welcome back to the Palm and Pine Podcast. We are grateful to be back with y'all again here today with another exciting episode. And as usual, I'm here right beside the incomparable, esteemed,
hard to comprehend sometimes,
hard to comprehend, right? The brains of the operation, Professor Barlow.
Yeah,
how you doing,
should
sir?
Tell you a little something about our operation.
Yeah, that tells you about how much limited brain capacity we have. But we are certainly grateful to be back today, and grateful to be out here in the outdoors and on our back porch
when
in
you
studio.
Can be in the outdoors for a change. It's below 80 degrees at the moment.
It's
I can't believe it.
It's so pleasant. Yeah. And I tell you, Douglas, we have a guest today.
I am so excited
about our guest today. You probably couldn't sleep last night thinking about it.
I could not sleep last night thinking about the guest we were having today, Steve.
You've never been a good sleeper.
Not true, y'all.
Right. But today, we're very excited to welcome a mentor that's been a mentor from an early age for Douglas and I. But it's Luther Beecham. Luther's a lifelong Chiefland, Florida native. He graduated from Chiefland High School in 1961. He went on to Florida State University and then earned his Juris Doctor from Vanderbilt University in 1968. Now, after law school, Luther could have went on and done great things somewhere else, but he returned home. We're all grateful for that here to Chiefland. And ran a very successful law practice here, helped a lot of folks, including our family. He's done a lot of work to help us here in Chiefland. He did that for decades, and later he served as the general counsel for the Florida Baptist Convention as well. But Luther is more than a respected attorney, I can assure you. He's also an author and a nationally recognized speaker. His books, let me throw these titles on you.
Okay, all right.
I'll Try to Be Short. Okay, now he's trying hard. I will vouch for that. Another book, Legal Shorts, Not Briefs. Now, these books, certainly, as you can tell, they combine wit, storytelling, and lessons from both life and law. Now, he's taking that same humor and wisdom onto the stage, and he's a speaker delivering programs with titles like Leading with Laughter, It's Legal, Love is a Laughing Matter, and What You Need to Know About Lawyers. And boy, we could do several episodes on that subject. Audiences around the country have enjoyed his unique blend of legal expertise, down-home storytelling, self-deprecating humor, and whether he's talking about
he'll fit in here.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if he's talking about estate planning, leadership, or just the lighter side of life. Luther has a way of making people laugh and think at the same time. And with that, Luther, welcome to our podcast. We're so grateful to have you.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be with you and Douglas. I had not, I don't think I'd seen either one of you in a long, long time.
A long time. That's our fault, too.
When you live in the woods, we were talking about this on a previous podcast, you might not see somebody for 20 years when you live in woods.
Yeah. Well, it's been less than 100 years.
Yeah.
I think the last time I saw you, Luther, I've got a good friend of mine, childhood friend I grew up with, and we were cohorts, and I know you're familiar. He's your nephew, Blair Beecham. We grew up together. Now, he kind of semi-retired and moved out to Kansas where I was. I semi-retired and moved from Kansas back here. But he called me one afternoon, and he said, "Steve, I'm going to take you out to dinner tonight, steak dinner." Now, Blair Beecham, he's the type of person that would let you take him to dinner.
That's what I thought.
Rarely is he going to pay to take you to dinner. So I, of course, jumped right on this. A steak dinner Blair Beecham has invited me to. Well, it was actually a men's dinner at a Baptist church, a steak dinner. And that was the last time I saw you. And I would guess that was 6 or 7 years ago.
Oh, okay, fairly recently for the woods, yes.
So, but yeah, we grew up, you know, Luther, we grew up in the Baptist church, and you were always there every Sunday with us, and the thing I remember the most, Luther, is you always set an example of welcoming everyone. It didn't matter if you were from Chieflin, not from Chieflin. You were open to anybody that showed up there at that church, and I always noticed that in you and respected that. You know, because we can get in a small town and be a little closed off. We can establish some little cliques. But I remember as a very young child recognizing that you would do your part to kind of open up to people.
I've always enjoyed being around people and getting to meet folks, and that's just been part of life for me. It's easier for me than it is for a lot of folks. There are many things that I can't do, but one of the things I think of a gift that God gave me is to be able to communicate with folks, and it's been a blessing to be able to do that. And I have a lot more friends than I deserve.
Don't we all? That's for sure.
Well, maybe tell us a little bit about your family, your father, your grandparents, and how they ended up in Chieflin, and how that transpired and evolved into you being
on the Beecham side. My grandpa Beecham, I think, was a teenager when he moved from Jackson County, Florida, out near Marianna. He moved with his parents, and he had a lot of brothers and sisters. I don't remember exactly how many, but some of them settled down in Levy County. And then my dad was born between Chieflin and Trenton, about halfway between them. And so our roots are pretty deep in this area. There's not much of me above ground, but my roots are deep. And my mother's dad, I kind of believe that he was born over close to the Levy and Marion County line, but moved to Chieflin in somewhere around 1912, I believe. And he was not the first resident of Chieflin, but it didn't take long to call a roll when he got here. And my mother was born in Chieflin in 1915. My dad had been born in 14 between Chieflin and Trenton. And so we've had, you know, a lot of family connections there. And then my dad had, Daddy used to tell it that he said there were, in his family, there were six boys, and every one of them had a sister. Of course, it was the same sister. There was just one girl.
Sister, okay.
Oh, one of those, yeah.
And so, my dad often said that there's plenty of Beechams, there's just no demand for them.
We do have plenty of them. Yeah, plenty of Beechams.
Wow. Now, you ended up going to law school, becoming an attorney. Was that something that your father always wanted for you, or is that something, the idea you came up with, or...?
It probably had more to do with my older brother, W.O.
Okay.
He was Woodrow Otis Beecham, Jr. My dad
name like Woodrow, you got to do something, right?
So that's why I call him W.O. But anyway, he always enjoyed arguing and hearing talking and stuff. And so I can remember him saying, "Well, you ought to make a good lawyer," to my brother. And so maybe that's what inspired him. And he went to law school and later became a judge. Hmm. And that may have had some influence. When I went to Florida State, I majored in history, but maybe it's because I couldn't do anything that was technical. And so that was better to... And then when I got through with college, they weren't hiring a lot of historians anywhere. So
you reckon.
I decided to go on to law school. And I wound up at Vanderbilt because I had a couple of professors at Florida State who had Vanderbilt connections. And
oh, okay.
They told me about a recruiter was coming down, and they encouraged me to talk to him, and I did. And there's a lot more to that story than you'd probably want to hear.
But oh, we want to hear it. Now, moving to Nashville in those days, that was a big change for you, your first time out in the world.
Yeah.
And what was that like?
Well, probably the most memorable thing was I had signed up to live in the dormitory.
Right.
And I was assigned a roommate, somebody I did not know.
Sure.
And the roommate I had was Jewish fellow from West Hartford, Connecticut.
Wow.
Probably,
very different.
Probably the most arrogant person I've ever known in my life. And when people would ask him where he was from.
We couldn't fit in Yale. He was from Connecticut.
Yeah.
So he was mad.
But he said he was from West Hartford.
Oh, okay.
That was because I think some ordinary, common people could live in Hartford, but okay. You had to be upper crust.
Right.
He drove a convertible, I forgot what kind of sport car it was, but it was a white sport car, convertible, and he would park it on the sidewalk or by the fire hydrants or wherever.
Wherever he wanted.
He collected parking tickets like they were green stamps. And one of the things, I got a lot of stories about him, but I'll share one of them, but during the orientation, he would wear these bright colored, back then they call it madras material sport coats, but they were okay. Some bright plaid, and he would sit front and center at the classroom and correct the professors. In one of the classes, he told the professor, he said, that's not right. He said, my father is an attorney in West Hartford, and he said so and so. Anyway, during one of the breaks, this is orientation week, I was out in the hall, and there were maybe four or five other law students standing there in a little circle talking, and they were talking about my roommate. And one of them said, well, did you notice what he said in that last class? And somebody else said, yeah, but what about yesterday when you did this? And they were each chiming in, and I said, not only that, he's my roommate. And an old boy from Atlanta looked over at me. He said, is that right? That's the saddest story I ever heard. I thought he might apologize. You know, he might be afraid he defended me when
right.
I said he was my roommate.
Yeah, yeah, you're like you were defending him, yeah.
No, that's the saddest story.
He felt sorry for you.
Oh, okay. There were some adjustments to make, but that was probably the biggest one. But, mm-hmm. But I did enjoy being in Nashville.
And you decided to come back to Chiefland. There's probably a temptation to maybe stay in the city or not.
Well, maybe some. At the time, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. Vietnam War was on at the time, and my student deferments had run out.
Oh, okay, I see.
And I interviewed with mostly in Florida, because I did want to come back to Florida, but I interviewed, in Jacksonville and Orlando area and St. Pete and a few other places, and got a whole stack of letters telling me how impressed they were with me and what a fine lawyer I would be one day. And the kind that they would like to have in their firm. And then they had that word, however. Because of your uncertainty about whether you're going to be drafted or not.
Oh, right.
We're not in a position to make a commitment to you at this time.
Okay. We're not going to pay to move you to our city. Right.
And my dad was encouraging me to come back home. And,
yeah.
I said, well, I'll do that. We'll find out what happens. And I reached my 26th birthday just before I would have been drafted.
Wow.
And so I appreciate all of those who did military service, and and still grateful for people who were willing to serve. I did not do that, and I had gotten married a year before I finished law school, and we were wanting to settle down. So.
If I could back up a little bit before we get going further. Chiefland High School, graduated in 1961. Tell us a little bit about Chiefland at that time. Like, what was it like at the high school? Who was some of your classmates? What was that era like?
Well, one of the things that back during that era, and Chiefland's still very active in Future Farmers of America chapter, and our agriculture teacher and advisor was Mr. P.T. Dix, who was well-known in those circles throughout the state of Florida. And in fact, we had a six-year period, Chiefland chapter had a state officer 5 of those 6 years.
Wow, that is impressive.
Two Beck boys, P.K. Beck and his younger brother, Chuck Beck, who was a classmate of mine, both of them served as president of the
state chapter
state of Florida in FFA. My brother, W.O., and I were both had served as vice presidents, or because they called them all vice presidents. I think he was, maybe his was secretary and mine was reporter or something on the state level. And then Carol McElroy, who later became the ag teacher at Chiefland, but then he was, as a very young man, died in an electrical accident. But anyway, Future Farmers was big. I played football and basketball in high school because we needed just about everybody to play to make up a team.
Yeah. And you needed 11 people. You know,
like Riverside Christian, they can't always get up a team to have a season. Yeah.
Well, and in basketball, I was usually the
guard.
I was usually the 5th, 6th, or 7th man on about a 7-man squad. But I did play some and have some interesting stories from some of those days. But anyway, that's some of what was going on. At Chiefland School, grades 1 through 12, probably the year I graduated in 61, probably the total enrollment for those 12 grades was around 500 students. And we had 29 in my graduating class.
Wow. Well, one thing you might appreciate, another one of your relatives, there are Beechams everywhere, but I guess it would be your niece, Kimberly Parnell.
Right.
She gave me, I hadn't been back up to Chiefland High School. You know, they ran me off and when I graduated. So I thought, well, you know, things have cooled off. Maybe now I can go back up there. So, you know, of course, they tore down everything and have built all new. So Kimberly gave me a tour of the whole thing. And, of course, the ag building that we used to use in the 80s is now part of the locker room for the football team. So
one of the few things still standing.
Right. Yeah. That would be one of the few buildings still there. Now, but so they moved the ag, the FFA, up to kind of the main building, and she gave me a tour of that. And I was pleasantly surprised to see all of those state trophies and awards. I mean, like you say, that school's been known for FFA. They moved all them and had a huge wall.
We were pleasantly surprised to see that now the rooms are air conditioned.
Yeah, all air conditioned. Yeah, very nice. But yeah, I was glad to see that. I'm sure some of those awards were your crew, Luther. But I recognize some from my years that I was in FFA. But they did preserve all that, and they've got this ginormous wall of FFA
Now, what was the big thing in agriculture in 1960? Was it mainly cattle in Levy County?
Yeah, and a lot of watermelons.
Okay, a lot of watermelons even then. Okay,
watermelons, peanuts, cattle probably were the main thing. And I had, I remember, my dad had some farmland, and one of my projects was 6 black Angus steers, and they all got out on the highway one time. But
as they do.
Yeah, I didn't think steers got out. I thought that was just bulls.
And then I think it was. One might have been my senior year. I had about it was a small watermelon patch, but the prices were really good that year. But I was away at FFA convention, I think, when the peak came, and so my dad had to see about the get the people to to do the harvesting. But anyway, that was one of my projects for watermelon. So, and then I can remember my brother and Dr. Meeks, that they were classmates, David Meeks Jr.
Okay, okay.
And his mother was a first cousin of ours. Anyway, David and W.O. Had a cantaloupe patch, and they had me do a lot of the work for that because they had to be away on different things and trying to turn some of it over to me.
You know, that sounds a lot like when Doug and I worked for our dad. We would get started on a job, and our dad...
He'd have to go talk to you.
Yeah, yeah. Our dad, we flipped a lot of farmers' home houses. You remember that, you know, and it'd just be an old block house in town, and we'd gut it. And about the time we got knee-deep in it, all of a sudden, Dad is like, I got to go see Luther. And I tell you, it even kind of tainted me a little, Luther, because I was concerned. I was like, why does my dad always have to go see a lawyer? why does he need legal counsel? I grew up just worried about what my dad must have been into to need that much legal counsel.
He was getting the next job lined up.
Well, yeah.
And your dad and I were very good friends. And not only did he build the house that we still live in, he built that house in 1980. And my wife and I are still living there. And, but we were good friends and business partners in, you're familiar with the subdivision we did. Called Seminole Forest.
Oh, drive by it every day.
Your dad did that, and then we invested in some houses together as well.
I think it was the trio was kind of my dad, you, and H.C. Henderson.
Right. We had some property together.
I was trying to count just in my head how many houses our dad has built. And when you think about it, I mean, it's so many.
Yeah.
And I think about...
And then there's some you don't know about.
And there's some, and then you think of another one, you're like, oh, there's the Laporta house, oh, there's the Lord house, and, you know, Corbett, and, you know, on and on and on, the Hires, the Holmes, and on and on. And it's hard for me to comprehend that level of productivity today. Maybe because I'm on my phone too much.
Right. Well, I always say when I was born, I was born into the second house he had built.
Mm-hmm.
It just shocks me.
Yeah.
How a man with a full-time job would have done so many things.
Yeah, just the amount of construction. And he was also a type of builder that didn't subcontract everything.
No, he made sure we all had as much work as possible.
right. Yeah, we learned all the trades.
He would take a lot of friction for it taking 2 years to build a house.
Yeah.
From the owners.
I'm gonna try to reach this without knocking the cameras over. But I wanted to show you something I found, Luther.
And
I think it speaks volumes of our dad. And I think you'll appreciate this. But I was out there cleaning up the barn, the old shed.
Mm-hmm.
And I found this sign, and it's one of Dad's signs.
He would have put on something that he had for sale.
Yeah. But what I appreciate about this, Doug Barlow, and we'll show this on the screen, but just one word, builder.
Right, kind of like Trump.
Builder. And I'll show that again, and we'll get a picture of this up.
I remember being very proud of that.
I just like how there didn't need to be any other explanation.
Right.
Builder.
And he was. And he built up a lot of folks in friendship as well as building houses.
That's what I really appreciate.
One of the things I think we, at that time, it was a big house and a fairly expensive house that your dad built for us.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to have a builder to do that, and I don't remember us ever having any kind of conflict while he was doing it. And I've heard other people talk about people who built their houses and they had almost knocked down, drag out fights trying to get through it. But your dad, our friendship grew stronger and rather than being torn down by that.
Yeah, he was certainly a people person, and metaphorically, that word builder. You know, he built Doug, he built me, he built my brother, built us
up. Gave me many a whooping.
Yeah. Gave us correction when we needed it. Some of us needed it more than others.
I don't doubt that.
But you know, that word builder epitomizes. But,
you know,
really
he would whip other people's kids.
Yeah.
You know, if
yeah.
they were messing around. You know,
yeah, do you remember those days, Luther, where Dad, he might get me and them Hill boys, Bradley Hill, Jason Hill, and whip all of us.
He whipped them Tillis boys, you know.
And them Tillis, whip Murray and Terry. And the parents would come thank you. Melba would, Doug, I want to thank you for correcting them boys for me. That was the way it was,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that was a different world. You know, they whipped you at school.
Now you'd have to go see your attorney if you whipped the boy.
Now he would have to see.
He's in bad trouble.
Yeah. I'll tell you a funny story I wanted to remind you of. You might not remember this, but when we first moved here, the early 70s, you'd run those Civitan basketball games.
Yeah.
Right. So we went to one, maybe there were a couple hundred people there, and I was just a wee little kid, and you'd give everybody a ticket with a number on each end, and you'd tear it in half, and y'all would save half for a raffle at halftime. In this particular game, the first prize was a portable radio. And second prize was something insignificant, like a box of popcorn, you know. So come halftime, you got out on the court. There was a microphone, a couple hundred people, and you had me come out, a wee little kid. And my job was to draw the ticket out of the Belita bag. Okay? So here I went. I drew out the one for first prize, you know, and you read it out. 136! 136! And there the old boy, yeah! He won that radio. Yeah, he'd come down. And then I drew out the second one. You read it. 219, 219. Nobody answered. 219, 219. And then finally you turned down to me and said, boy, you haven't drawn your own number, have you? And I reached out of my little old pocket. 219. I had won the second prize. And, you know, I look back on that, and it's a good thing it was the second prize, or they thought we had rigged that raffle, right? So you might not remember that.
No, but I didn't remember.
That's
that.
A fond memory I have with you. And
I was thinking about your dad, and one of the things that he and I served as deacons at First Baptist Church at the same time, and he and a pastor that we had didn't get along extremely well together. I don't remember y'all have any memories of that, but at one of the deacons' meetings, I think it was your dad that said to the pastor, it seems like our services would work a little better if you didn't spend as much time on the announcements, because that's taking up a lot of time.
Right. He's not really preaching, padding it with announcements.
Well, and then I said to the pastor, I think what Doug is saying is that maybe if you just give the announcements and not preach them, it would work better. And that really set him off the preacher. And after the meeting, I remember your dad said, I don't think I was in too bad of trouble until you added that about him preaching him out. Said then he got mad with both of us.
Because y'all dogpiling the old preacher by that point.
And then another thing from the deacon meeting, your dad was not in this meeting because we had a system of you could serve for 3 years, I believe it was, and then you had to rotate off for a year. Mm-hmm. And so your dad was inactive at that time, but we were talking about prospective deacons for the next year. Mm-hmm. And someone had brought up a name that I won't mention because you'd probably remember him.
Right.
And somebody said, well, what about so-and-so? And somebody else said, no, absolutely not. We had talked about your dad earlier. So we had a lot to say about Doug Barlow, and that most all the comments were favorable, and we think that'd be a good idea. And then somebody said, well, we need another one. What about this other fella? And somebody said, absolutely not. Said, I've seen him down there back at the hardware store cussing like a drunk sailor. And this other deacon who was an elderly man and kind of slow for keeping up with things, he said, Doug? And I got in his face. I said, no, it was not Doug Barlow.
That's not
we. That was somebody else.
We're on a different man.
That's right. But years later, Barry Beecham, Blair's brother, he was familiar with that story. He wasn't there at the time, but he'd heard me tell it. And the president at Stetson University, where Barry went, and then my son Lance later went to Stetson University. But the the president, I can't remember his last name now, but his first name was Doug. But anytime it would come up, Barry would say, Doug? In the same way that I had told the story about
that. He did that? I can't believe that. Yeah. Well, I have one story, too, I wanted to bring to you, Luther. And again, you might not remember it, but we, growing up in the Baptist church, especially in this late 70s and really that whole decade, that church had a very active youth group. Mm-hmm. And so we, you know, we'd go to Ridgecrest every year. We'd raise money to go on trips, and we had some really good youth ministers. Honestly, probably you know getting that going. But we would do different programs, and a popular game show at that time. And Doug, you'll remember this The Gong Show.
Oh yeah.
And so it was like a talent show. So someone would get up and do a little dance. Or any kind of talent, and the judges would ring that gong if it was awful and just get them off stage. And so we had a night there at church in the old fellowship hall where we did the gong show. And I'm again, like Doug, I'm 6-7 years old. This is one of my earliest memories. But one of the judges was our dad. And there's like three judges on that gong show. And I believe on the TV show it was maybe two women and a man. But anyway, my dad was the man on the judge panel. And so different acts would come up and, do this. And, of course, there was 50, 75 of us in there watching this production. Well, here comes Hopalong Cassidy, which was Luther Beecham. You were dressed, you had an old straw cowboy hat, and you were a country western singer.
Do you remember this one?
Actually, I think my name was Cowboy Smart.
Cowboy Smart?
I think I got that.
And you got up on a little stool, and you had a guitar. And this guitar, it was a sight. The strings were all, there were strings hanging off of it, broken. There was a hole in it. It was cobbled together. And maybe two strings worked, but you got up there and you sang that song. And every now and then you, ba-ding, you hit one of them strings as you sang your song. And all of us are just rolling. Everybody just falling out. But the ceiling, you got through the whole song. You didn't get gonged. We were all happy because we wanted to hear the whole song. It was a typical country song. You know, you'd lost your wife and you'd lost your dog, and very, very sad. But you got to the end, and then it came time where the judges could give their review.
He didn't get the gong.
No, he didn't get the gong. So each judge gave their review of your performance. So they got to our dad, and my dad just, his first review that, on you was, Cowboy Smart wasn't that great of a singer, but dang, he could sure pick that good.
Bang, bang, bang.
Yeah.
And actually, I've never been able to sing or to play any kind of musical instrument.
Well, that brings up a good thing. I tell you what we were thinking, Luther, and maybe you'll humor us on this, but, growing up in the church, we had all those great, great old songs. We had, Precious Memories, How Great Thou Art, The Rugged Cross, all those old songs we used to sing. Mm-hmm. And, today we have that contemporary service. You go to church, there's a lot of contemporary service, and that's great. We enjoy
it
that,
is.
But it's not the same music. They'll have like a rock band out there. And what we would love to do to close out, Douglas is the talent of this whole show and the brains.
Okay. You've already admitted you can't sing, but we don't let that hold us back on the Palm and Pine podcast. Okay.
We thought we'd just sing
We thought we might do a little something.
And Luther, you and I can just do the chorus, and you'll know it.
Very familiar with it. And it is a public domain hymn. I already checked. And you'll be proud of me.
Yeah, we won't be a copywriter.
And you don't want me to play the guitar.
No. Right.
I just want you to join us on the chorus.
Or pull the string.
Hand me my chicken pan there under you, my instrument.
You will be keeping the rhythm there,
this
Steve.
This is an old classic
spiritual called Bringing in the Sheaves. You will be familiar with the chorus.
Give me a beat, Doug. Yeah.
Sowing seeds of kindness, sowing in the noontide and the dewy. Waiting. waiting for the harvest and the time of reaping. We shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves,
bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves. We shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves. We shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves.
Very good, y'all.
Sowing in the sunshine, sowing in the shadows, fearing neither clouds nor winter's chilly breeze. By and by the harvest and the labor ended, we shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves.
Here we go.
Bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves. We shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves. We shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves.
Clothing even weeping, sowing for the master, though the loss sustained our spirit all the days. When our weeping's over, he will bid us welcome. We shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves,
bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves. We shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves. We shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves.
One more time.
Bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves. We shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves. We shall come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves.
Woo! All right, amen. All right. I'm not sure what sheaves are. What do you know, Lou?
I thought it had to do with bundles of grain.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we don't have a lot of grain down here.
Bundle of sugar cane.
We used to do, when your dad and I did some prison ministry, we changed the wording on that, and we called it bringing in the thieves.
Bringing in the thieves, that's right. I tell you, I went on a couple of those prison ministries with y'all, and I was maybe 12 years old, and it touched me. Talk about singing. Those inmates, there would be maybe 8 or 10 of them, and oftentimes no music. They're just a cappella.
Yeah.
And it was the most joyous singing. And I remember even as a young man thinking, these guys are locked up. They don't even have clothes. You know, they got inmate garb.
Yeah.
And they are happier and more grateful than we are in this beautiful church.
Well, they weren't
on Sunday
watching
morning.
TV and listening to radio, probably.
Yeah. So it was a good lesson in gratitude. And I'm thankful for you, Luther. Mm-hmm. Thankful for the example you set for all of us. Thanks for letting me go along on things like the prison ministry and doing everything you've done for all of us here in Sheepland. We're so grateful. And thanks for coming to see us today. Well,
thank you for inviting me. I'm really glad to get to be with you and Douglas again. It been a long, long time
been
since
long I... Yeah,
yes, yes.
In
right,
fact,
right.
I don't know that I'd seen Douglas since he was a child.
Right. Well, you live in the woods. You don't see people.
That's right. So that's we've been all over the world, Luke.
So I've lived in 8 or 9 states. So
yeah.
We love to give a gift to people that appear in person at the podcast.
In lieu of a speaker fee.
It's a little because that will not be forthcoming. So this is a little sample of our cane syrup we make here that you may take home. And if you don't like it, you can give it to somebody. And
I bet I'll like it.
There
I
you
like
go.
It. I like cane syrup.
All right. Luther Beecham, thank you so much for being with us. And we'll catch y'all next time and keep it Florida. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode of the Palm and Pine Podcast. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered professional advice. The views and opinions expressed by the host or any guest are our own and do not necessarily reflect the views of any affiliates. Our opinions are just that, opinions, and are not legal or medical advice. But in our opinion, avoid lawyers and big pharma at all cost. Copyright 2025, Palm and Pine Podcast, all rights reserved. Please subscribe and share.
Okay, until next time, keep it Florida, and we'll see you soon.